time here on RNIB Connect Radio to talk about a brand new musical, Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror by Extraordinary Bodies, a co-production with the Bristol Old Vic and the Theatre Royal Plymouth, which has just premiered at the Bristol Old Vic before touring to the Lowry, the Theatre Royal Plymouth, and then visiting Southampton, Poole and Brighton. And I'm delighted to say that Claire Hodgson, co-director of Wardour, and two of the cast members, Tilly Lee Cronick, who plays Peter the Downtrodden Ring Boy and Wardour's son, along with Johnny Leach, a manual wheelchair user who plays Rene, a aerialist who performs on the trapeze, who is also the same age as Peter. Welcome to RNIB Connect Radio, Claire, Tilly and Johnny.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
Thank you, Toby.
Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror is set in 1933 Brandenburg, Berlin, and not good times for people who might be seen by Hitler and his followers as being different in all sorts of way. And I think Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror was maybe a year in the making. Claire, would you be able to give me a bit of background to the company Extraordinary Bodies and also the making of Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror?
Yes, Toby. Delighted to be able to speak to you. Extraordinary Bodies is 10 years old as a company, and we've made a number of shows, six shows in total during that time. And we were formed out of the Olympic opening ceremonies when my company, Diverse City, met Cirque Bijou, a circus company run by my co-director, Billy Orwin. And we decided, after creating a spectacle for 11,000 people, that we would set up a circus company together. My company, Diverse City, has always been committed to being integrated and inclusive. And indeed, my co-director, Jamie Bedard, is a disabled artist. And we were aware with Billy that circus was a place where there should be more disabled artists, more visible disabled artists. And we were drawn to making circus because it reaches a large amount of people. And most of our shows up until more recently have been outdoors because we're really committed to getting performance to a wider range of people. Wardour's has actually been much longer than a year in the making, in that it had quite a long genesis, in that it came from an idea by the writer Hattie Naylor, who then we put together with Jamie Bedard, who's also a writer, and they began to develop the script together. We had a research and development time at the beginning of 2020 at the National Theatre. And we actually did a read-through of the existing script then. And we all sort of know what happened next, which was there was no theatre for a pretty long time. And we were able, at the end of 2020, to do a small bit of development of the music. But it sort of had to remain in ice until we began to perform again, which was September 2021. And both Tilly and Johnny were in our show then that toured, which was called Human. And from then onwards, we could really begin to accelerate with the process of making Wardour's. It's a big show. There's 13 people in it. It's got a live band on stage. It's got a full and beautiful set, which is inside a circus ring. And it has bleachers. It has an entranceway to backstage, and it has an amazing roof that you see on stage, which is the roof, the underside of the big top that you look up to as the audience, but also the roof of the set is a reconstruction of a destroyed synagogue in Germany. So we try to put inside our set reminders and to honour the people that we're representing on stage who lost their lives between 1933 and 1945.
Tilly and Johnny, there were some wonderful scenes between your two characters, Peter and Rene, and the amazing trapeze scene, which we'll probably come to in a moment. But before we talk about that, could you maybe give me a bit of background to your characters, Peter and Rene, and their relationship, with maybe not giving too much away, but just a bit of background about them?
Yeah, so Peter is the ring boy of the circus, and yeah, he doesn't really get to perform very much. He's always been put down and told that he's not good enough, but he really wants to shine and be an aerialist and feel part of a group and of the family, the circus family. And I think Rene is kind of the only, not the only, but the kind of leading member of the circus family that really encourages Peter to explore that part of him, to perform with René on the trapeze, really encourages him and sees the potential in him. So there's quite a kind of complicated but deep connection between the two characters.
René is the experienced trapeze artist in the group, been doing it for many years, confident, a queer character, disabled, proud of everything they are, even though they know the world outside doesn't want that. The story that René follows is that world coming in, caving in. They knew what was happening outside, but didn't expect it to really happen to them and change who they are.
And as I mentioned to Claire earlier on, you know, sort of that may sort of relate to certain experiences that you might have had in your life as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few moments in this show and story that I can't not help relate to in some level. A lot of it was a lot more in your face in this era. And these days it's subtle things, systemic things, the small cues people say that can then lead you in the same directions and massively affect your life. It's really scary, and stuff that I've experienced from birth.
And coming back to that amazing trapeze scene between the two characters, between Peter and René, how much sort of rehearsal and working through of that scene did you have? And how do you keep it sort of almost the same for every performance? Because, you know, the audio description is always the same for each performance.
Yeah, we created that scene in the we created moments of that scene in the first week of rehearsals together. With my disabilities, I don't really fit the standard traditional playbook of circus. The joy of working with Tilly is we're great at finding new ideas and exploring and finding those unique moments. We had Billy, Claire and Kate Webb watching these moments and just finding those little sparks that either we found during all this, or we needed an outside eye, the audience eye, to be like, that moment we were like, okay, this is, we never expected this. We then just piece those together over weeks of rehearsal, those little emotional nuances throughout it. But it was a lot of, it's always a lot of fun to create circus with Tilly. This felt really magical.
And there must be a lot of trust between the two of you performing those scenes, Tilly.
Yeah, that's a lot of trust. I mean, Johnny is very trusting in me. I lift Johnny a lot, and I take a lot of responsibility for keeping him safe. So it feels very amazing to have someone trust you that much, and I also trust him a great amount. And yeah, I mean, that we've as Claire said, we've worked together in Extraordinary Bodies before, so we've spent a good few years kind of building that trust. Now it feels very natural and instinctual when we make it together.
Johnny, I know you're a musician, drummer, and I think also a sound designer as well. Am I right in thinking that someone suggested that you might be good at all the sort of trapeze and aerobatic kind of work?
I started off as a drummer when I was 8 years old, studied music at college, university, and luckily, very, very early in my career, I got my first job with Extraordinary Bodies on What Am I Worth as a drummer. A contract said drummer. And in a lunch break, I mentioned that when I was a kid, I used to walk on my hands, and to like get onto the sofa because it was high up, I would have to like do a semi handstand to then like throw myself up. And that ever since then, I've kept up with it. And Billy and Claire's is pricked up. And instantly after lunch, we had a show us your secret talents session, and I did just that, and then I'm now an aerialist. It's a fun life.
Claire, coming back to not only the set and the costumes, but also Charles Hazlewood's wonderful score and soundtrack. And for me, I thought there was a bit of 70s sort of funk there, and maybe a bit of Susie and the Banshees as well. And of course, great drumming by Johnny and playing by the rest of the band. But the soundtrack is very important to the whole show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And we really wanted to create a show that had an underscore, meaning that the music not only exists for the songs, but also it's behind the whole show all the time. although we are sort of used to that in film, that's less usual in theatre. Usually when there's dialogue on stage, there's not often stuff behind it. Yeah, it's been a really exciting thing to try and create a show where you have the dialogue and the songs, but you also have the band creating mood as well behind each scene. And sometimes what they're creating is working against what you can hear, and sometimes it's working with it. And sometimes in the soundtrack, the underscore, there's warnings of what's to come. But also what I really enjoy when I watch the show, which I do every night, and I really love watching it every night, is that each character, quite a lot of the characters, have their own sound that's attached to them, or their own sort of soundscape. So I'm only imagining Toby, but I imagine that probably helps a bit around recognition for visually impaired audience members when there's a repetition of themes in the music. But yeah, it's something I notice. I mean, Johnny can say more about it because he plays it every night, but there's definitely characters have a palette, don't they, Johnny?
Yeah. One of the early ones in the show is Joseph's underscore, the second scene. And it's really fun when we have those, because it means we can then, when they come back later, completely flip it on its head and still have that. The audience members kind of relate to this, but then something isn't right. And that's always a fun thing to play with every night and twist it as the world twists in and on itself.
No, it was a fantastic, I mean, the soundtrack was amazing. And I think you're right, Claire, having those sort of almost musical motifs in a way that give you an indication about the characters and when they're coming back. I mean, obviously there's the audio description by Willie, but it's nice to have that as well.
Yeah, and I noticed last night I was thinking a lot about Gerhard, who's you know, there's a central well, there's three love stories in the show, but there's a story of Krista and Gerhard's love, and I was really recognizing last night that sort of theme that goes through when they're together. I don't want to describe it because Johnny's a musician and I'll probably get it wrong, but it's a bit sort of Western to me, you know. So I don't know how to describe it. Country and Western moment. Yeah, it's something that enhances the show. And what was really good during rehearsals was that the musicians were in the room all the time, and they really did. For a long time, Johnny, you guys were sort of observing the actors, weren't you, to try and get a sense of what the physical show would be like, and then trying to follow that with the sound and create the sound around what you were seeing. And so it wasn't created in isolation. It was created collectively in the room, as was the script, and the songs were written for the people who were in the room.
A lot of my favourite moments are the ones where, because we had the luxury of being in the room, you could see someone's brain sparking on a certain idea outside the band. And then suddenly Johnsy, guitarist, keyboardist, musical director, was just playing a little thing. And then suddenly we kind of like, followed this, we were able to kind of follow that idea and that concept and that little spark from someone from the get-go, and those were always brilliant moments.
Yeah, I remember one of those moments, like when we brought back Castle in the Sky that we'd been rehearsing in another room, which is a song that's performed early on by Mish and Mosh, the characters, who are both deaf artists, and they perform a song in British Sign Language that is about following your dreams. And we brought it back into the room, and the musicians were like, we know what goes underneath this. And so we were able to collaborate to create something.
There are some wonderful moments in Waldorf's Circus of Magic and Terror. What would you all like audiences to come away with from seeing the show? What do you think they should sort of come away with and experience from coming to see the show?
Well, I think hopefully people would, you know, have more awareness of that time, and also some elements of the history of that time, that, for example, the routine sterilization that began of disabled people and people living with mental illness in 1933, and just, you know, begin to be aware of that. But more, I suppose, really, that although it does open up that historical period again, is more just to get people to think again about the assumptions they make about other people's lives, and, you know, the way in which there's a lot of easy talk, I would call it, around quality of life, and nobody has the right to decide what someone else's quality of life is. And that once you begin to do that, you're in very dangerous territory, you know. And our job as human beings, for me, is to make sure that we all ensure that all of us have the best quality of life we can. But that requires no judgment about which lives are more important. I suppose ultimately I would like people to reflect on their own position in relation to the material and to think about, I mean, one of the things I thought a lot doing the research was how quickly and easily this escalated and was carried out in a time without modern communication systems. I mean, you know, the speed at which the Holocaust was carried out and the speed at which these beginning laws were brought into being at a time when people had very less ways of communicating with each other. It just is such a warning about how quickly ideology takes hold and how quickly the fire starts. And of course, that sort of thinking requires to tap into fear, you know, and what I was talking about at the beginning, this fear of like scarcity and that some people get to survive and some people don't. And I just think that has to be resisted at all costs. There's enough for everyone. There's always enough for everyone. And we are not in a competition with each other. Yeah. So that's, yeah, those are my thoughts about it, Toby.
I hope that people leave kind of challenging their own expectations of what they think people can do, of what disabled people can do, about what kind of what, like, I feel that something really special about this show is that it's really, truly inclusive. Like, it feels like there are just so many different people on stage representing so many different things, and we're all working together to convey something, and that feels really magical. And I guess I want the audience to leave feeling that sense of kind of community between all of us. And yeah, especially with the circus work, really challenge their expectations of what a circus body should look like and what certain people can do, you know, because I think people, even the most liberal people, still have a lot of preconceptions and thoughts that we maybe don't think we have anymore.
Last night I was thinking about this, actually. Someone said they, an audience member, saw it a week ago and it was still thinking about it. It's a sad comment to say. These messages that are in this show, some of the cast members won't be able to drop them after, because actually it's things that are in our lives and experienced week by week, day by day. We just get to put them on a stage with lights and music this time and make them a bit more fancier. But it'll be nice if I want it to just hit people. I want it to stay with people for a while, and they may have a chance to experience in some way what a lot of the public and society are feeling. If that can even leave a subconscious, long-standing idea in their head, hopefully it can change their actions in the long term and lead to more change, safer change, and, as Claire said, a better quality of life for everyone.
Well, it is a fantastic show and one which has stuck in my mind since seeing it earlier this week. And Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror continues on tour around the country until, I think, early June. Claire, if listeners would like to find out more about this fantastic musical, Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror, and a bit maybe more about Extraordinary Bodies, where's the best place for people to go to find out more?
I think the first stop would be our website, which is extraordinarybodies.co.uk. On the website are a number of resources. But yeah, across the tour, we will be doing touch tours. There's audio description at every performance, and we'd really like to welcome audiences. So we would love it if people would come, and we will be there. I will be there to greet people, and Tilly and Johnny will be on stage because they have a different job. But yeah. I'm certainly around to meet people and talk to them before and after the performance.
Well, I would certainly recommend it to anybody out there for a great evening in the theatre, and one which might just sort of maybe make you think a bit as well, but a fantastic performance is all round. Well, thank you very much indeed, Claire, Tilly and Johnny, for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about the fantastic musical Wardour Circus of Magic and Terror.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Toby.